Welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast, presented by the National Federation of the Blind, the transformative membership and advocacy organization of blind Americans. Live the life you want.
Hello, and welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast. I'm Melissa Riccobono, and I am here with the man who is never duplicated, but often imitated.
Well, never intimidated. This is the new Lewis. There's a lot going on around here. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, there is a lot going on in the world, and there has been a lot of very crazy weather. I know you said, you know, you live in Atlanta because, you know, they just shut the city down when it gets icy or snowy.
We don't handle snow. It's so funny. My northern friends say, oh, you guys in Atlanta, you don't have to know how to deal with snow. We have 7-8 inches. I'm like, we know how to deal with snow, even if it's just a half an inch. We shut the city down. And that's the way you deal with snow.
But, you know, that's not how we sometimes handle snow and weather. And sometimes there's things that have to get done and that have to get done, not just because they've been planned for a long time. But I mean, there's lots of very good reasons why certain things happen when they do. And we'll get into that. But, you know, we just had the National Federation of the Blind Washington seminar at the end of January. And we had a lot of ice, a lot of snow. There were plans that were made that had to be scrapped. There were things that had to be done differently than we usually do them. But the show went on. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, is Washington Seminar and sort of that show going on and the experiences that people had at the Washington Seminar this year, which was a little bit different than some years.
a lot different. And I'm glad we have the individuals here to join us that can help us discuss this topic. So want to start with our introductions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I got to start with this introduction. This is a very good friend of mine. We've known each other for many, many years. And he had the, I'll say, intimidating decision to make around our Washington seminar efforts. And I have to admit, at the top of this hour, I was very pleased with the way that he worked out the Federation's strategy for addressing the snowstorm. Because we have to allow individuals to make choices. But if we don't facilitate the ability for them to make choices, then people feel like they're forced to do one thing or the other. And I have to admit that because of the way that we dealt with this, and I always marvel at the Federation and the way that we do these things, and it's because we have such significant leadership, but because we handled it the way that we did, I think it created some pretty interesting opportunities that I'm going to definitely mention one that I had later in the show. But with no further ado, my friend, the President of the National Federation of the Blind, Mr. Mark Riccobono. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And it's pretty cold here in Baltimore, so I'm thinking of coming to Atlanta next week.
Come on down.
I am
Come
coming
on.
To Atlanta next week. So.
Nice.
So next we have somebody who knows all about snow and ice from the great state of Alaska. We have Kelsey Talent. How are you, Kelsey?
Hi, I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Great. And you were at Washington Seminar this year?
Virtually, yes.
We're glad you were virtual. I was also virtual, by the way. glad you were virtual, but we could have used your help. You know, you probably have shoveling skills and other skills that maybe we could have used. So
you don't shovel in Alaska. They just walk over it.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Well, okay. That's true. You maybe had snowshoes we could have all used.
We were so excited and prepared, we sent the snow there early.
Oh,
so you did
that's
that.
That's why we got the snow. Well,
yeah,
thank
I'm going to
you,
talk to you after this episode. I'll be contacting you after the episode. And we have one more guest. And this young lady here has always impressed me. She's also, I'll just disclose, one of President Riccobono's favorite because of one of the songs that she's put out there that he plays on a regular basis. But I remember going to a Utah State Convention and hearing her sing live. Wonderful voice. Barbie Elliott, glad you could join us.
Hello. Thank you so much. And yes, we are used to snow in Utah too. And I was there in person and it was a fun time. My sixth Washington seminar, and it was definitely not the same as normal. Definitely a new experience. But yeah, we are used to snow out here, and we have none. So the only snow I have experienced this winter was at Washington Seminar, which is strange for the Rocky Mountains.
Well, like I said, we have a packed load of individuals joining us today. But before we get deeper into this conversation about our Washington Seminar and the way we weathered the storm, let's pause for a brief message.
Advocacy doesn't end with awareness. It ends with access. Under ADA Title II, public entities must ensure their digital content is accessible by April 2026. That includes existing documents people rely on every day. Many agencies underestimate the scope. Thousands of inaccessible documents. Limited time, limited budgets. The good news is that large-scale remediation is possible. For clear guidance on what the rule actually requires, visit www.title2.info. This message is brought to you by Numa Solutions. We've remediated hundreds of thousands of pages in days, aligned with WCAG 2AA guidelines at enterprise scale and speed without sacrificing usability for blind users. Accessibility isn't a privilege, it's a right.
All right, so let's get into this conversation.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, I think we should just start at the beginning, talk to President Riccobono about what we did to pivot and sort of what was the thought process behind, I'm kind of guessing, canceling the whole thing didn't really enter your head, simply because there's a lot of work to be done. And the timing of the Washington seminar is important. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that, and then just about sort of your thought process and how it started and what you did in the beginning to make sure that people could, people who were able to get to the seminar were able to be safe and get to the hotel and whatever else happened to make sure that everybody was able to get the work done that needed to be done.
Well, I mean, canceling was definitely on the table. We always try to look at all of the options and make an informed decision to the best that we can. So, you know, the Washington Seminar has been an annual event for us since 1973, and it doesn't have to continue to be. But what we have found is that there is real value in bringing a concentration of blind people to the nation's capital to focus on some key issues, especially to keep the concerns of blind people in front of the members of Congress and to really build those relationships. So we do have to plan that months in advance. We do have a formula we use in terms of watching the congressional schedule. We know what history tells us about what Congress does. This year, a number of things turned out to work against us. The first was that Congress deviated from its usual patterns.
No.
Can you believe that? specifically, you know, the House and the Senate, especially the House, has been playing this game of chicken with the Senate. So Speaker said, well, we're not going to be in town. We're passing our bill and we're leaving. This is what happened in October as well. Well, the leaving happened to be during the week of Washington Seminar. But we felt that that was okay. And we were watching the weather reports. And, you know, you continue to watch them. And, you know, they, at least for Baltimore, I can say, you know, 10 days out, 7 days out, they were much worse than they ended up being. So it's a tricky thing to balance. And then we have to balance, just to give you a few more factors. One is, you know, it's not like we have a group of paid lobbyists. You know, our members, they're all volunteers. Many of them have full-time jobs, other things that they're doing. This is a dedicated time that they've taken off to come to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. It's not like they can just say, oh, yeah, all right, let's move to the next week, you know, yeah. Because, you know, we have been successful at getting more blind people into employment. So that's another factor. And then you got you know, as a membership organization, you know, I have to balance a lot of people very passionate about being in DC. There were people who made extraordinary efforts to try to get to DC, still couldn't make it because they feel very passionate about the work that we're trying to do. So these are just some of the factors. Obviously, we never want our members to feel like they're required to put themselves in a situation that's difficult. Many people did make extraordinary steps to change their flight to get to the DC area early, so they were in place. Some people who wanted to do that simply couldn't because of the path of the storm and where they were. So we got together, we weighed all these factors. You know, of course, there are financial factors too. Mm-hmm. If we just outright cancel the hotel contract, we're still on the hook for the money. So there's always, you know, it's not just one or two factors, it's many factors. And I think we ended up...
It was the individuals who've invested money that they're not going to be able
to
get
absolutely.
Back
as well. Yeah. So the great thing is we are a team. We're an organization of leaders. So we got a number of folks together who had different perspectives and analyzed the situation. And I think we came out with a pretty good plan. And then and we made all the plan Bs we could. And to some extent, you let the weather roll in and roll with it from there.
And it rolled in.
Yeah, it definitely did. You had affiliate presidents, too, that some of them were staying at the NFB before the seminar for a retreat. And so making sure that everybody got down. I mean, I think that was very, very smart, even though, you know, I was a little sad because I had to say see ya to you a day early. But you were able to go down to the hotel with people and pivot that way to make sure that you guys were out of Baltimore before anything happened. And so I'm sure that helped everybody feel a little bit safer. And you know, I certainly felt safer just knowing that you guys were out and whatever happened, you were all together in a hotel and everything was going to be fine. Because, you know.
Yeah. And I would say that the thing that really works out in this case is that, and this happened to us similarly in 2016, although was a little more dramatic this time. But The beauty of it is, I mean, we had more blind people on Capitol Hill than members of Congress were present. Mm-hmm. And that did really make an impact, especially for our senator from Alaska, who, you know, his constituents weren't able to make it, but he had already agreed to host our congressional reception, which we still had. And I really got the sense that, because we were kind of getting messages. Yeah, he's coming. No, he's not coming. Yeah, he's coming. No, he's not coming. But I think when he walked in the room and figured out, man, there's more blind people here than, you know, my colleagues in Congress, that really made a huge impression. In addition, this is the 1-2 punch, in addition to the fact that he had a very powerful virtual meeting with the Alaska delegation earlier that day.
Very nice. And I love the way you slipped in the John Perret phrase of the 1-2 punch. That's very nice. John Perret and his team did a great job of facilitating. So, Kelsey, tell us about the whole Alaska experience around Washington Seminar.
Oh, wow. Okay. Gosh, it was a roller coaster. And I'm so glad to hear that our senator was able to make it to the reception and see the amount of Federation family that was there, because at my very first Washington seminar, a comment he made to me was, I've noticed a lot of you blind individuals on the Hill. Is it your national convention or something? So it's been great to build that relationship with him. And so the storm, oh boy. We had some members that were supposed to show up on Saturday and kind of get a day to adjust for a seminar on Monday and hit the Hill hard. But as soon as the storm started, because in Alaska, we have to take 2 to 3 flights often to get to DC, our flights started getting canceled and adjusted pretty quickly on Friday, And so we got pretty early heads up that we're going to have to do some adjusting. And eventually everyone's flights got canceled.
Wow.
So that was fun, but we were able to pivot to virtual. And luckily, the staff members were very accommodating, and I got a lot of good feedback from people who were actually able to make it there in person, saying that we made the smart decision to stay home. Because even after flights were canceled, there were some of us who were still trying to maybe get there Monday night because our meetings were Tuesday. So because these meetings, you know, they're really important to us and they make a difference. And doing them virtually worked out great. But had I not had the in-person meetings in my previous seminars, it would have been very hard, I think. So I'm very grateful that it was my third Washington seminar, not my first, but there were members who were with me that it was supposed to be their first Washington seminar. And so I was sad not to be able to share the experience with them. Even prior to getting ready for this podcast, I was looking back at some of my reflections and just being there in person with everyone. It's just an amazing experience, but I can't wait to share it with them next year and, you know, hit the hill hard again. Truly was different this year.
You're right, though. It is something powerful about being in that space with all of these individuals that are there for that unified effort of really educating our policymakers. And there is really no substitute being in the room with that legislative, either congressman, congresswoman, senator. It not only makes you feel more powerful, it also, I think, brings more power to our issues in the minds and hearts of the legislators. Barbie, how was your Utah experience?
So we were doing a nonstop flight. And so most of us made it. There were some who couldn't because they had some double flights where they had to get to Salt Lake and their flights got moved and changed and canceled. So we had both kinds of people. We did have some longtime attendees, and we had a young high school student and his mom that were first time attendees. And we got to share that experience with them and tell them how much fun it can be, even though the first couple, 3 days we're stuck in the hotel again. But it was interesting to watch how it went down as far as the difference between the virtual meetings and the virtual meetings and the in-person meetings, because on Tuesday, all of our meetings were virtual. I mean, the House people weren't there. Our House representatives were the ones we had scheduled. We were meeting with staff, and they just said, we're not coming into the office. We're going to meet you on Zoom. And we did. And they listened. And it was nice, and it was well done. And because we had done pandemic, we got to do that. I was supposed to come in 2016 when you guys had Snowmageddon, and my flights made it impossible to get there. And I didn't get to do any virtual because we weren't doing that back then. And it was nice to be able to join into those Zoom meetings on Zoom in pandemic times and in other times when we did hybrid with our representatives here in Utah. And I could stay at work and still go to Washington seminar for a little bit. And it was also nice to be able to do it in person. And yes, there's a huge, huge difference. And we were able to, because we do have snow in Utah, talk about, you know what, when you have barriers, it doesn't mean you can't. We in Utah know how to plow that snow, and we know how to shovel it and make it so people go to work and they have a regular. But if you're not ready and you don't have the preparation and you don't have the personnel and the training and all of the tools in place, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we as blind people want. We want the tools. We want the preparation. We want the training. And these programs that we're talking to you about today are here to show you this is what works. We know because we've experienced it both ways. And we've been stuck, and the barriers aren't going away just like the snow isn't going away.
Yeah,
what's really significant, one element that's really significant about what Barbie said was, in 2016, Congress wasn't taking virtual meetings, right? Mm-hmm, it wasn't even our infrastructure. It's not something that Congress even did. So the fact that we have, you know, been leading the way, even with our virtual Washington seminar, and really continuing to change with the times and adapt, and that our team has been able to guide our members on those adaptations, really critical.
Agreed.
Well, and I mean, we did have the virtual training. You could go on Zoom and hear the training. I don't think we've ever offered it on Zoom before, but we recognized that, hey, there's going to be people that are going to be taking virtual meetings from back home who, if they were here in person, would be getting this training, and they need the information so that they can speak of our policies and our legislative issues. And so we need to give them the tools. So I thought that was really good as well.
Mm-hmm. So we had kind of three legislative issues, as we traditionally do. Love to know which of those resonates most with each of you.
You know, I went with the third one. I'm going to call it the third one, but it's the education, because it's the one that affects me probably the most, was mm-hmm. the one I was most passionate about. But man, after I heard other people talking about the technology, I love that one too, because man, I wish it was around when I was trying to buy my own technology, didn't have a job and was a stay-at-home mom. And I thought, man, we got this. And I was excited that we were talking about the things that are important. But yeah, definitely the education and protecting those things that we need affects mm-hmm. me directly. I'm the second person in my state to get to go to public school because of IDEA. Oh, it wow. wasn't done before me. And the wow. person before me had a TBI, or we didn't call them that. We called them itinerant teachers back then, who was her grandmother. And so I kind of am the first. And that was important to me because I felt like it helped me become the person I am today. And now I work for our Department of Services for the Blind here in Utah. And, you know, rehabilitation, that's going to be my thing too, because I see what it does to the lives of the people that I work with every day. And I was able to give that example to our staffers and our representatives and our Congress to tell them, you know, this is what I have seen in my own personal experience. And so that was where my passion was. But man, that technology took my heart too.
Yeah, but it's those personal stories that make all the difference. So it's nice that you were able to share your lived experience with them.
Definitely. Kelsey, how about you?
My favorite initiative we had this year was Blind Americans Return to Work Act. I have a unique story with this one. It's my third Washington seminar, so it's been an initiative of ours every time that I've attended. And the first year, I really struggled with this one. It's really has some technical terms, and I couldn't really see what the purpose of it was. But now I have some more background and some more stories along with it. And I had a good friend who was able to share his story with me. And I truly believe that this initiative can change my future in a good way, and all of our futures. So this is, I think, one I'm most passionate about. Also, in our meeting with Senator Sullivan this year, he also was very passionate about it, and saw our passion behind it and was able to hear the stories and was very interested in it. And just that, like, getting him to hear our stories was very powerful.
President Riccobono, are you allowed to pick a favorite? Can you have a favorite?
Well, yeah. Well, I would say I was going to go with whatever was left. But
okay.
but to the point of, you know, protecting the laws that impact the education and employment of blind people, I would offer that it's a very unique opportunity for the National Federation of the Blind. We're usually the change agent. We're usually pushing for innovation to improve the laws, to enhance them, to make them work even better for blind people. We have made a strategic decision that now is not the right time to necessarily work on innovation based on, you know, the signals that we're getting from the administration and from the Congress. So I think this is particularly important because it's not, number one, what most people would expect from the Federation, but it is truly authentic to who we are. You know, if we were not showing up in Congress and talking about these bills, these particular laws that intersect with blind people, you know, if something happened to them, if changes were made in these programs, the average American would never even know, mm-hmm. right? Unless they're a blind person or have a family member who's blind, they really would never notice if these programs went away. So in one sense, you think, kind of boring to talk about protecting stuff that's already there, but really critical because if we're not talking about it, nobody's talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really what has helped keep programs for the blind really relevant in the minds of members of Congress. And even this week, Congress is talking about voting. And because we have a presence, we've been talking about our issues, our team has been hunting around Congress to see if we can find a way to strengthen voting accessibility while that's talked about. That's because we already have that credibility with the members of Congress.
Mm-hmm. And that speaks to, again, the fortitude of the individuals who were able to make it, because my personal experience going, we had some individuals from Georgia that came. About half of our delegation was able to make it. Others weren't due to cancellations of flights and the bad weather, et cetera. But we had a really mixed experience. So some of the staffers in the House side actually went into the office and we met them in the office. And I think that they were just surprised when we were confirming meetings that morning. They were surprised that we were going to be there. But because of that, I think those meetings had much more substance. And the ones that we did have to flip to virtual, what I noticed is the offices where we had good relationships, the virtual meetings went really well. The offices where we didn't have really good relationships, it's something lost in getting them to really feel, what we're talking about when it's done virtually, because then we're just talking heads. I think that there's something to be said about being in the room, seeing the canes, watching us walk independently and navigate through those environments that really is kind of an epiphany for them. But I have to tell this story. When we had our meeting with Senator Ossoff, he usually has like a little town hall thing. He invites many organizations to come and you get maybe 60 seconds worth of FaceTime, talk time with the senator, snap the photo, and then the next group comes, right? But the NFB and a small group from Head Start were the only ones in the room. So he had this whole dedicated 45 minutes to an hour. So we ended up with like 20, 25 minutes of just FaceTime talking about NFB issues with the senator, and it allowed us to go a little deeper. And he was really engaging his staff. He was asking real questions. He charged them with responsibilities of writing memos so he can evaluate the support. He ended up giving us his cell phone number. That wouldn't have happened if we wouldn't have been there. It wouldn't have happened. So that was a really cool consequence of weathering the storm as well.
Well, and I bet, did the people in Head Start, were they in that conversation at all, or were they separate?
They had their time too.
Oh, okay. I was thinking all of you were together, and that would have been really cool because, when you're talking about education, they might mm-hmm. have said, "Oh, we have blind kids in Head Start," or
We were in the same room, but we were taking turns and engaging with the center, and I made sure they had my contact information. But the key was we were better prepared. It was really interesting to watch that too, because, our group, we went through the trainings, we had done several meetings, so we had a rhythm in place and that kind of thing. The Head Start individuals, I think they were surprised at that opportunity. So they really didn't have a strategy. They were just going to get that FaceTime. And what was really interesting, which endeared the senator to me, is he really ended up helping them engage with him. He's saying, "Well, I should probably do this to help you guys. And you should," that was awesome. So it was a really interesting experience that I will cherish. But it was really, if we weren't in that room, that would not have happened. So that's one of the ways that we get active in the things that are happening in this world. We are a subset of society, and all of the issues that face any other American challenges us as blind people. President Riccobono, you were recently on the Access On podcast, and I believe you had some comments about the current state of the ICE situation. I think we have a recording of it. Let's take a listen.
I imagine this must be something that you have to wrestle with and that you give considerable thought to, but in the kind of politically charged environment that we have, and you see what's happening as we record this in Minnesota, for example, and all of the publicity that that has surrounding it, blind people are migrants too. Mm-hmm. And so these things are affecting blind people. How do you determine as president when we react to something that is in the public arena like that, that is just all consuming in the news, and when we should sit it out? And how do you make that call?
Yeah, well, you know, in this case, immigration issues, obviously not new, have been a very hot topic over the last couple decades. Our role in the world, and we only have limited resources, is to make sure that whatever priorities are taking place aren't further disadvantaging blind people. And so we want to do two things in this regard. One is, you know, continue to acknowledge and support people who are blind, who also have these intersecting characteristics where they may be affected by the broader things that were happening. So, you know, making sure that our chapter meetings continue to be a welcoming and safe place for all blind people. You know, we don't want to start creating an environment where we're asking people for their citizenship papers when they show up to a chapter meeting. We're here to support blind people. We're not here to be the police for people's immigration status. So we would want to continue to message to our members that that's the case and not get involved in that. We do have the interesting situation with Minneapolis right now. What should our chapter do if ICE shows up? And we've tried to give some guidance on that. At the end of the day, very difficult because we can't predict everything that might happen. The second aspect I would offer is that we know that in a lot of situations, blind people are still at a disadvantage because of accessibility. And that is an important place for us to apply our expertise and focus. So we know that the immigration process itself continues to have accessibility barriers. And so we try to focus there because we can make a unique difference there. We also remain concerned about what is happening at detention facilities where blind people might end up. This also intersects, I think, with some of the work that we've done in prisons, where we know that disability is just another layer that really gets completely ignored and accommodations completely ignored. And so, you know, we want to focus our energy and expertise on trying to help blind people who do get into those facilities, make sure that they can continue to maintain some degree of independence, that they can use their cane, things like that. So that is only a partial answer to your question. The consciousness of everything that's happening and having a great desire to want to do more, but also recognize that we only have so much time, energy, money, imagination. So if we focus our energy in the areas that, you know, really impact blind people rather than jumping into the mainstream, it's not to ignore those issues, very clearly not to ignore those issues. But again, if we're not focusing on the specific impact on blind people, nobody's focusing on that. And I feel that my charge as an elected leader, but our organization, that's what we've been asked to do. And so that's how I tackle it. My answer may have made it sound easy. It's not easy. And it's heartbreaking to watch what's happening in communities like Minneapolis and even where we have blind people who through their own consciousness are going out to protest, then want to know how we can help when they get into difficult situations. And, you know, we have to parse out, well, is it because they were treated differently because they're a blind person, or because they were treated unjustly because the laws aren't actually being enforced? Difficult conversations and really difficult things to balance.
So before we drill down with you, President Riccobono, would love to hear what Kelsey and Barbie think about the statement, the comments that you just made.
This is Kelsey. I'll take a start at that, those comments. I agree and kind of try and take the same approach in leadership. There's a lot going on right now, and it's not easy. And some of our members, you know, come to me with concerns, and all I can do is listen and try my best to help where I can, when I can, and just do what we can, where we can.
Yeah, I get that. How about you, Barbie?
Yeah, I appreciate what you said, President Riccobono, like, because I think that was a very logical explanation of what we need to do as blind people, as a group in the Federation, to be supportive, to be calm and collected as we work on things that are not calm and they're not very collected. And as I work with people from all walks of life in my job, I see people who are immigrants, and I see people who are ex-convicts who went blind while they were in prison, and they tell their stories, and I hear firsthand the experiences of these people, and I see them as human beings. And I think sometimes we forget that for every story, for every action that we hear about on the news, there are real people out there experiencing this stuff, even if it's not you, even if it's not me. And I just feel like I can't do anything about that, but I can give my love, support, and training to the people that I get to work with every day, regardless of where they come from, regardless of what they've been through, to say, I've got stuff that can help you. Even if it's just a listening ear, I've got something. And I love that the Federation has taught me that, that we take people where they are, and we take people and help them become a better them, whatever that means.
Nice. And I know, President Riccobono, you probably don't go around just listening to all of the presentations that you make. So I would imagine that you probably haven't heard what you said during our Access On podcast, which is generally a podcast about technology, but it shows how all these things intersect and overflow with one another. So I'd love for you, upon reflecting on hearing your comments, any subtle difference, nuance, or anything you'd like to emphasize in what you just said?
I think the only thing I would add is that sometimes organizations feel like they should, or get public pressure to make these statements of solidarity. And I'm not at all suggesting that that is a negative. But, you know, as I have engaged with leaders in the National Federation of the Blind, and I will say this is largely something that is more been true over the last 7 years or so, these statements of solidarity. You know, what I have heard from folks, from blind people, is fine to make a statement, but we want action, right? So this is where, you know, we look for, well, what is the intersection with blind people, and what can we uniquely do? You know, a lot of blind people or their families bring blind people to the United States because, in theory, the opportunities have been better for blind people in this country. And we do get requests, you know, around immigration and how to help with immigration. And, you know, we're not immigration experts. And so we look to refer them to people who know that area. And we can provide the expertise, especially when blind people do run into true accessibility barriers in the immigration process, which does happen. But in terms of the technicalities, not our expertise. So this is where these broader social issues also allow us opportunities to be expert and authentic to who we are, but build those relationships with folks who have the expertise that might be relevant to the moment that we're meeting.
Well said.
I think that's really important. And I would say too, it's such a tough place to be in. And I don't envy our place, because if we react in a certain way, we're going to get pushed back by people that don't understand or think that we're acting in a way that they don't agree with. And if we don't say anything, then sometimes we get the blowback of, well, where is that NFB? You know, they're just being silent. And I think what people don't understand is really how much thought and reflection goes into these decisions, both to act or to react or not to, or when. And also sometimes if we can, I mean, sometimes there are things going on behind the scenes that people don't know about. I think the Randolph Shepherd is a pretty good example, where obviously there's been a lot of problems with people saying, well, blind people aren't going to get these contracts anymore and this and that. And so we finally are part of a lawsuit, but that took time before it was ready to be filed. And so I heard a lot, well, where's the NFB? What are they doing? And then, you know, a month or so later, boom, we're part of this lawsuit. But I think people do sometimes tend to get impatient and sort of want everything right away, and don't always trust that just because we're not being forthcoming with every single thought we're having, that we're not thinking about it. So those are sort of my thoughts.
I think the part that you said that was, like you said, sounds simple, but it's really the center of it all. We have to focus on the blindness component. I think a lot of people make their determination about us as an organization based on one individual's way of presenting the National Federation of the Blind rather than the organizational perspective, because the organizational perspective is really just about blind people. I mean, we have to recognize, again, we're a subset of society. We had people that were enjoying the Bad Bunny concert at the Super Bowl, and we had NFB members who were listening to Kid Rock Alternative. So we don't weigh in on whether that's the decision to make, but we make sure that blind people have the option, opportunity, skills, and ability to participate in whatever they choose to participate in. I think a lot of people miss that because, you know, we can be very passionate as individuals around our position around certain things. But the truth is, blindness does not discriminate based on any of those other factors. So as long as we focus on making sure that blindness does not interfere with the individual's ability to fully participate in whatever way they choose, then that's where our focus is. And I think that's what also gives us our strength in our legislative efforts. You know, they're nonpartisan. Blindness doesn't choose a party. And I just am proud of being a member and so glad that I found the Federation so that I can really pursue my dreams in whatever way I choose. And blindness will not be that factor that prohibits me from doing that. So again, it's simple to say, but yes, it's very complicated to actually enforce. So again, President Ricobono, I really appreciate you actually having to sometimes, I don't want to say hide yourself, but focus on that bigger, broader picture of blindness and not what you as Mark Ricobono would personally prefer to do. And that's got to be very challenging for you in many instances.
There are things I think we would want to hound on other people about. You know, blind people aren't getting statements of solidarity on some of our issues. Maybe we should work at it more, but we've also said that's not our goal, right? We speak for us. We're happy to speak for us. And, you know, we're not looking for others to necessarily speak for us. So we're okay with it. But I think there are times that because we built a powerful organization, if we don't say anything, you know, there tends to be a very quick response. But we don't see the same response in the other direction when folks aren't. I mean, how many people have spoke up against what the Department of the Army is doing related to Randolph Shepherd? Well, only blind people, actually. So, you know, it's one of those things. I'm not encouraging that we, beat up on other people for not joining us. But this is where we've taken the approach that we want to influence and have our blind members bring blindness to these other spaces, these other organizations, so that we can have influence by making sure that those spaces are also accessible. So it's an interesting area, and I think it's valuable that our community continues to talk about it.
Does anyone have any final thoughts to offer? It's been a good conversation. We went from dealing with the weather to dealing with these overwhelming public issues. This podcast covers the spectrum, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, yes, it does. Got kind of serious pretty quickly, which is all right. It's all good. But yeah, I'd love to hear final thoughts from folks.
I'll go first. I am grateful for this opportunity to participate in this podcast. It's been fun. It's been informative. And I am grateful. And I just want to mention that I am excited that you use my music as your intro outro. That's cool. Makes me happy. just because it does. But most of all, I think it's just fun to belong to a group that cares about blind people as much as we do in the Federation. And I'm grateful to have the opportunity to participate in all kinds of things, such as Washington Seminar and this podcast and conventions and conferences and other things that we do. And I hope that others find the same joy that I have found.
Thank you for being with us.
We appreciate you too. Yeah. And we love your music. Keep
making
it.
Thank you.
Kelsey, how about you?
Well, I'm just honored to be here. I feel like I'm in a room of just so many knowledgeable people, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be on this podcast. I've been listening to the Nation's Blind podcast for a year, kind of on my smart speaker just in the background, and was been thinking it would be really cool to be on one of those one day, and
well,
here
look
I
at
am.
That. So. You keep hope alive. You never know.
Yeah.
You made it.
That's kind of what the Federation has done for me. I just have, you know, these ideas of, wow, that would be really cool. And then they present themselves. And so thank you again. And hopefully I'll be on another podcast someday soon.
Oh, we'd love to have you. And thank you for listening.
You can dream, you know. We'd love to have you back. President Cabono.
President Cabono, you get the last word.
Well, I would just offer that, I encourage all of the listeners of the Nation's Blind podcast, just as we do in our broader organization, to, you know, give feedback. What are your thoughts, your ideas? What are your feelings about these topics? This is, you know, as blind people, we need to continue to talk about these topics, the light ones and the heavy ones. Yeah. And, you know, the beauty of what we built in this organization is we don't, you know, we may debate vigorously, but at the end of the day, we're going to choose a direction and go in that direction together. But that doesn't mean that leading up to it, you know, we don't have a lot of hard conversations. And so I think this is a great podcast topic to have people give feedback on. And what other hard topics should we be discussing, especially relevant as we, you know, run into the 5-month stretch here until our 2026 national convention, which is where the decisions get made, you know. So, and great to be on with these great ladies. Barbie, of course, you know, she immortalized a statement of mine in song. So I'm always grateful to her for that.
Now people are going to pay closer attention to the intro outro music.
Yeah. That's right.
Very nice. Well, I appreciate all of you for being here. As always, interacting with our membership and hearing, you know, these diverse lived experiences always makes my life much richer. President Cabono, again, I'm reflecting on the days of, you know, the early days of the Nation's Blind podcast where we had the presidential segment, but I know we have you all over the place now. So we appreciate the little time that you're still, you haven't forgotten about us little people here on the Nation's Blind.
And I just come when I'm invited now, you know.
Maybe we should invite you a little more often.
There you go. We'll look at doing that. We give you more presidential privilege. I remember those. Yeah. But seriously, please take President Cabono up on his challenge. Give us your ideas. Let us know what you'd like to put out there in that space. And we can take them easy or hard, fun or serious. And we love having these conversations with our members and the broader conversations with you, our listeners. So thank you. And until next time, remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.
We'd love your feedback. Email podcast@nfb.org or call 410-659-9314, extension 2444.